It's 12 minutes past seven here on your Sound Alternative. You're listening to Breakfast, and I'm joined by the person that joins me at this time of, I don't know where that was going with that little segue. Danielle Raphael is here for Book Club. Good morning.
Hello. Well, you're not wrong. I am here in the flesh. We're back for another book club this week, and it's always a beautiful time, Pam.
It is. It's always gorgeous to be able to make some space for books on the radio.
It is.
You know, not always an art form that goes together, books and radio, you know,
no.
But audiobook, you know?
Perhaps.
Audiobook, perhaps.
But we can talk about it.
We can. And we got lots to talk about this morning. Well, let's get into the headlines. What's going on in book world?
Yeah, well, I wanted to just take a moment to highlight, and thanks to Kirsty, our newsreader, who's actually brought this, breaking news story to my attention today. But the Council of Albany has had to have a special meeting last night about the banning of a couple of books. And this book by Yumi Stimes, Welcome to Sex, is no stranger to the controversy. Just last year, Big W went wild and was banning this book, and then people were abusing the staff over it, and it was crazy. And there was also another council who attempted to ban this book as well, and it's all come about because of a group called Keeping Children Safe Albany, led by former One Nation candidate Michelle Kinsella, who's essentially obtained enough signatures to enforce this meeting. But I won't go on too much about it because I just think it's a terrible thing, underscored by fear mongering. But what I will say is, like we saw in the Council of Yaz last year where this issue was brought up, community support is vital, and if we can get behind this book and obtain enough signatures or put enough support behind it, we can reinstate it back onto shelves. And it's very important we do so because we know that sex education is very important at age-appropriate stages. So a bit of an upsetting story overnight, but hopefully one we can rally behind.
Taking a bit of inspo from what's going on in the States, we covered in the headlines
a couple of weeks ago
some book banning, and it's really upsetting to see when this happens. And I know we're supposed to be unbiased in our little journalistic tilt here, but I'm rolling my eyes when I see these stories, Danny, and I get really upset at the idea of censorship, in particular censorship for children, when the censorship that is being discussed and sort of tabled isn't necessary. It's not censorship from things that are going to inform them in the wrong way. We need children to have an education and an access to sex education. And sex education isn't actually about sex most of the time. Sex education is about relationships. Mm-hmm. It's about consent. It's about communication. It's about understanding different genders and different ways that people can understand themselves. And I think that there is that terrifying kind of fear-mongering that happens in not only small towns and country towns in America, but places here that do get stuck in this idea of what that is and what sex education is. So it is a real frightening story. And thank you so much for bringing it to our attention. For a little more info on it, and stay tuned to the news headlines. And of course, Kirsty Lichtenstein will get you across what's going on.
She sure will.
We're going to get into another headline this morning that looks kind of at what the US was doing and brings it back home to Australia.
Nice little segue. Well, Pam, we all know that any sort of list regarding art, film, whether that's books, it's always fraught.
Yeah.
And it's, I guess, more prevalent in this social media age where a list looks lovely on a social media feed and it's easy to swipe to. So I get the appeal of it. It's also, I don't know about you, but the dopamine hit of crossing something off a list.
Ooh,
love it.
I love it.
Yeah. But I don't know if you've seen recently in the New York Times, you also love a list. They've created their top 100 list of books from the 21st century.
Mm-hmm.
And to give you an idea of what the books are, I've maybe read about 8 or 9
Truly.
Of them.
They have a feature on the list where you can say whether you've read it or whether you haven't or whether you wanted to.
Yeah.
Love that feature.
Yeah, and for many more reasons than one, books are very laborious, so haven't gotten around to all of them. And another reason is because none of the books on the list are Australian.
None of them. I was so shocked to learn this.
Right? Especially when there are so many celebrated and, successful authors publishing-wise in Australia, including Helen Garner, who has been able to kind of crack over the last few decades that, international stage.
Yeah.
But a few outlets in Australia have taken umbrage over this, and they've decided to create their own list. So a couple of those include The Conversation, who have gotten, I guess, their best literary experts together, and they've come up with their top 30 books, which I believe people are able to vote for. And Readings Australia also did a similar thing, and they kind of drip-fed to us over Instagram over the last couple of weeks their top 50 books. And those include a list of books which I'm more familiar with and maybe listeners will be more familiar with, including, I think, number one was Christos Tsolkas's The Slap, an Australian classic, as it's known. It was also a TV show, and many people would be familiar with that one. It also includes authors such as WA's Tim Winton and Charlotte Wood, and Helen Garner, of course. So a much more familiar list to me and maybe to the listeners out there. Pam, I really do want to know your thoughts on lists in general, though, especially when it comes to like things like music and film. What's your take?
Look, I think it's fun. I think it's a fun activity to attempt to collect and collate your favourites. It's nice, and it's nice to see other people's favourites and have it as a window into what people love. And I love places like Goodreads where you can kind of get a little peek into what people are reading and what other people are loving. But as Simon Morado says, you know, and with the most sarcastic tilt of all time, yes, ranking and listing art is the most, you know, is the best way to celebrate it. You know, it's obviously not. And I think that, you know, art has to be subjective.
Yeah.
The way that we enjoy it has to be. So lists kind of go out the window. The idea of something being the number one is completely ridiculous.
Yeah.
The New York Times best book, it was so different from the reader's choice versus the sort of critic's choice.
Yeah.
Even that as an example, you know, you're writing books for the readers, not writing it for the critics. I mean, some people might be. But even though I hadn't read either of those number one books, and I wouldn't say that I'm a voracious reader, but I like to read, and I think I have good taste. I was really sad to not see some of my favourites on that list. But then I was even sadder to not see some of my favourites on the Australian list. The Australian list did get across some really good ones, but I tell you what was left off. Melina Marchetta, Looking for Ella Brandy.
You're preaching to the choir, Pam. I think that is the most interesting thing for me. I think that what is left off of lists often says more about the list itself.
The maker of the list.
The maker of the list. And I must say, I do think Readings have taken, and The Conversation as well, have really made sure there is a great cross-section of diversity in terms of literature on both of those lists. There's many First Nations and POC authors on there, including the history-making Alexis Wright, who I believe was the number one pick for many of The Conversation experts for her work, Praiseworthy and Carpenteria as well. But a list is a list, and we can have fun and we can test ourselves, but you know.
Yeah, it's not, I don't think it's the be-all and end-all,
is it? It's not
the
be-all and end-all, exactly right.
No, absolutely not. Now, we're getting out of the headlines and into our blind date with a book. It's 7:20, we're with Danielle Raphael, we're talking book club, and our blind date with a book this week. Now, tell me, give me the blind date, give me the preamble to this blind date.
Well, I won't give you much of a preamble today, but what I will say is that one of the main characters in this book says that Hell is an artist 3 days out from their latest exhibition.
Oh, look, I think Hell is an artist looking
which
at a list.
Is an iconic quote. And looking at a list as well. Exactly.
I think I would have to agree with that. Hell would be an artist 3 days out from an exhibition, because the day before you've usually locked everything in. So you're in the panic stage, but you've sort of had to come to grips with it. 3 days out is just enough time for you to panic and want to change everything.
I feel panicked, and I'm not an artist in any sense of the word. But yes, today is all about the anxiety, panic and absurdity of the lead up to that important moment. It's Woo Woo by Wurundjeri-based author Ella Baxter, who I adore and is probably best known for her debut work called New Animal, which was about a young woman working as a cosmetician at a funeral parlour who stumbles into the BDSM community.
Oh, stumbles.
Which is like quite a sentence for 7:38. 3 a.m. on a Wednesday. But that was such a good book. And I think her latest work really just dials up the absurdity and the animalism of that first novel.
Okay.
It's about an experimental artist called Sabine, who we meet just days out from her major exhibition in Melbourne at the Goth Gallery called F You Help Me. And the thing we need to know about Sabine as an artist is that she's really well known for making these life-size puppets, and I can only really describe them as like a giant skin, so you can slip them on and wear them.
Ooh.
And what she does is she poses in them nude and then she photographs them, and so that is the content of this latest exhibition. And we meet her in the opening chapter, and her very loyal, sometimes distant husband is taking photos of her, and they're getting ready for this exhibition. And basically from there, things just spiral out of control. She's under a lot of pressure. Her gallerist is kind of putting on this immense weight to up the ante on her social media presence. So she starts to do these Instagram lives, but they get more and more obscure, a little bit inappropriate and weird. And then as well as that, she starts to hallucinate her muse and feminist art icon, Carolee Schneeman, and she's kind of with her in her house as she's kind of advancing this project in the lead up to the exhibition and mentoring her in her manic stage. But the most interesting thing is that while all of this crazy stuff is happening, she's also being stalked by this figure called the Remembrant Man. And as their interactions get more disturbing and more graphic, she becomes more feral and just goes berserk.
Wow.
And that kind of culminates in this really hilarious, absurd catharsis in the final kind of scenes. Pam, you're looking at me with a very funny face. What's going on for you right
Look,
now?
Look, I love a feral woman, and I love a feral woman written well. Now, there is a line which is a feral woman written badly.
Yeah.
You know, like there are feral women in cinema and in fiction that I'm like, one, that was either written by a man or it can be written by a man and be good. But sometimes when they're bad and they feel untrue and disconnected, it's, you know, they feel maybe written by a man. Well, they just feel really like ill-considered. You know, they feel a little bit weird, like the feral nature of the woman hasn't been backed up by all the things that were needed to make her feral. You don't really understand why she's become feral. And I think a good feral woman is a woman that you understand why she's become feral.
Yeah.
And you can kind of be on the ride with her. So as much as you can acknowledge it is feral, I don't think I want to just be totally confused about the feral nature of the behaviour.
Yeah.
You get confused about this, or do you feel like you understand why she's become feral?
You get confused because it is just so weird. Like, it is weird, but Ella Baxter has realised this character, like you just said, in such a carnal, primal way.
Okay, great.
That you were really able to understand and just really relish that feralness that I think is just, one of those animal qualities that we all have. But one of the fun facts about this book, one of the most interesting things is that, and Ella Baxter has spoken about this in her interviews about the book, is that it was based on her experiences of being stalked herself.
Wow.
And she was receiving these really graphic letters from someone, and it got to the point where she was just so enraged and so upset and frustrated. She just said to a friend, like, I need to write something back to this person. And so she was compelled to write this story. She even acknowledges the stalker in the acknowledgements of the book.
Wow.
So that's a really kind of interesting thing to know about it heading into it. But yeah, broadly speaking, it does speak to this trend that I've seen in the last year or so of a lot of authors trying to skewer the industry that they're working in. So whether that's the publishing industry or the creative arts industry. And those are really great because they often speak to that tension between, you know, art and commerce and capitalism and whatever. But I think this one does one better by, in my opinion, because it's just so weird and so refreshing, and it celebrates the eccentricity of that world. And dare I say, you know, in all of its very grueling and sometimes pompous glory as well.
It's a really interesting time for this story to be in book club, because I do think this conversation is really central to the pop cultural narrative at the moment, with pop stars like Chappell Roan really coming out and being like, I don't want you to stalk me. I don't want you to come up and pay attention to me. If you're not across this story, pop star Chappell Roan, who's kind of indie alternative, really great pop music, but definitely of that kind of queer camp pop realm, kind of shot to fame almost overnight.
Had been
making music for, you know, I think they've cited it as being over 5 years, but since the start of the year it is an absurd ascent to fame. And as a result of that, she's reported that people have been stalking her family and really like impeding on her personal space. And that has kind of opened up this dialogue about the sort of entitlement that fans have to celebrities, this conversation about stalking. Of course, we've heard about stalkers in regards to celebrities for years and years now. But the conversation is sort of ripe with new opinions and new perspectives at the moment. So that was my first thought when you mentioned stalkers. And I do feel like authors and people in this sort of public discussion at the moment are really leaning into this idea of what women are supposed to be like. You know, are we entitled to the niceties and the friendliness? Does Chappell Roan need to be lovely to her fans because they are loving her music and getting her to where she wants to be? And she really says no. She says, you're not entitled to my time or my private life or my peace. You're not entitled to it. And I think that we do love a playing nice, smiley, unupsetting woman. And that's kind of why I love a feral woman. I love a woman that's like, no, thank you. Go away. You're not entitled to this part of me. And it also makes me think of this book that has been on my to-be-read list for a really long time, but hasn't quite made it there yet. It's from Rachel Yoder. It's Night Bitch. Have you read this book?
I haven't read Night Bitch.
It's meant to be also a bit of a feral woman take, and there's sort of a carnal sort of situation. There's animals involved in this, and it has also just been, I think, greenlit for a movie, or there's a movie in the makes for it. So it kind of feels like it's along those lines of this idea of women kind of like, you know, losing the plot and becoming a little feral and aligning that with almost a, you know, an animalistic kind of primal desire to be not pleasant, to be not agreeable, to be feral.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. I think that's a really insightful point, because a lot of the book, it is so absurd, but I think the beauty of that absurdity is that there's always a kernel of truth there in that this is happening, like with the Chappell Roan example, this is happening and this is an experience that a lot of women face.
It's a really interesting conversation, and one that I love we got to have on Book Club this morning. If you want to get in touch, 0405 921 921, if you've read this book, Woo Woo by Ella Baxter, maybe you've read Night Bitch and you've got some thoughts on that one. Maybe you want to tell us what your best Australian book is.
Yeah, I would love to hear what everyone's favourite is. Number one was The Slap in Australia, and I think the New York Times was Elena Ferrante's
My Brilliant Friend.
Which, you know, without being a cliche, love that book.
Yeah, it's a great book.
But maybe you have a different opinion.
Yeah, maybe you do, and I want to hear it. 0405 921 921. Get in touch. Danielle Raphael, thanks for a great book club.
Thanks, Pam Boland.